Seekers, Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. The fun and frivolity continues in Tampa. Wow, what? I don't know. You know, what can you say about it? I've never heard so much garbage and lies in my life. It's just astonishing. Anyway, this hour is being sponsored by Chris in New York. And Chris's message is very succinct, to the point, and boy, do we appreciate it. This is what Chris says. This is a reminder to all True Seekers to sign up for a podcast subscription and sponsor an hour of the program. I love it. Thank you, Chris. Chris in New York is our hour one sponsor tonight. All right, this has nothing to do with anything, but it caught my attention because it was in the Times today. This is just too freaky for me. You know that I go off on the Catholic Church with alarming regularity, and Muslims and Protestants, and, you know, and occasionally the Orthodox Jews. But this is, by the way, it's Wednesday night. It is church night. And to kick off church night, this particular little piece of information that just, I can't tell you how it creeped me out. I mean, this would be a great, beginning of a treatment for a movie, a film like The Da Vinci Code or something. I realize that was a book, but this is just astonishing. It's almost too freaky for me. Here it is. This is from the Associated Press. It was in this morning's New York Times. Police say a vial containing the blood of Pope John Paul II was stolen Tuesday from a priest in Italy, but recovered by authorities several hours later. The theft occurred aboard a train where the priest was carrying the vial of the dead pope's blood from Rome to a suburb where the relic was to be put on display. That's what they were told. The railway police said the vial of the pope's blood was found in a stand of reeds and grass near the railway station in the seaside town of Marina dei Servitori, where the thieves may have disembarked. What? A vial of the Pope's blood? Pope John Paul II? How long has he been dead? How long does blood stay blood, Kathy? I mean, unless it's frozen or forever? Doesn't it separate into red blood cells and plasma? And a priest was carrying a vial of Pope John Paul II's blood. Wow. It is a vampire cult. I'm sorry, you may have been brought up in the Catholic faith and you're unable to escape because of what they did to your mind. Okay, you know, it's up to you. Or in order to get a little from the, a little more, I should say, from the intern you were boinking, like Newt Gingrich, you converted to Catholicism. But, this is a bizarre religion. When you think about all the craziness and death and destruction and murder and mayhem that the Roman Church has caused throughout the history, the last 2,000 years, it's unbelievable. And what they have been party to by their silence, i.e. the deaths of 6 million Jews, vis-a-vis the good Catholic Adolf Hitler. It's astonishing. It's just inconceivable how anyone could say, oh, yeah, I think I'll be a Catholic. Whew. A vial of the Pope's blood. Little too much for me. All right, now, this next email I want to share with you is from Joanne M. Joanne M. And it has to do with what I said last night about, I mentioned something about Callista Gingrich being a good Catholic. And Newt and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, this has got kind of a some risque references in it. So if you are opposed to risque references on your electric radio, this is a fair warning. If I were you, I would just tune out for the next 15 seconds. It's not that big of a deal, but here's the story, or the email from Joanne. She said, I just finished listening to the podcast of last night's show, and I heard you talk about how Newt Gingrich converted to Catholicism to please his current wife. I have to chuckle every time I hear some TV pundit describe Callista as a good or devout Catholic. That was not a communion wafer she was chowing down on in Newt's car during their lunch breaks, and Newt being a married man at the time. I was raised Roman Catholic, and I know the difference between a communion wafer and a penis. Joanne M., keep it lit. Ow! I gave you warning! The difference between a communion wafer and a penis. Yeah, go ahead, Malloy, repeat it, you know, just in case the censors weren't listening the first time. All right. Oh, my God. It's church night. Just a quick explanation. All the folks who regularly listen to this program understand what church night is. It's just a way of my acknowledging all those summer nights when I was a little kid, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old. I spent my summers with my grandparents who were Italian immigrants, but they converted from Catholicism to fundamentalist evangelical Protestantism when they came to this country after they had been here for a while, because they realized that if they remained true to their faith, they might be hanged. This is during a lot of anti-Italian feeling in this country. Italians were looked at as one of the trash races, along with darkies and Jews and Sicilians and Syrians and French, you know. They were just terrible, terrible, scum-sucking, mongrelized people. So my grandparents converted or did something. I don't know what they did, but they gave up Catholicism. By the time I came along, they were ensconced in this crazy Baptist religion, and the church they attended was of the Southern Baptist Convention, even though it was in North Central Ohio. And Wednesday night was prayer meeting night. Sunday morning was church, Sunday school, and then church. Sunday night was church. And Wednesday evening, usually about 7:30 at night, was a prayer meeting. It lasted for about an hour and a half. And when I spent summers with my grandparents, I, you know, had to go. The only redeeming value of all that was if I was a good little would-be Christian and behave myself in the upper room where 20, 30 adults on a given night would get down on their knees and pray, I would be treated to a enormous 10-cent ice cream cone at the Dairy Queen on the way home. And back in the day, Dairy Queen, a 10-cent Dairy Queen was about as big as, a church. It was enormous. So I would just sit in the upper room with all the adults who were praying. They would take turns. And I found it very interesting, very entertaining, the stream of consciousness that comes when you get 15, 20 people together in an upper room, and it's hot, and it's a summer evening, and you can hear the cicadas outside, and the mosquitoes are coming in because somebody forgot to put the screen up in the window there. But to sit there as a kid and listen to all that, it wasn't scary. It was just freaky. It was just like, wow, man, this is crazy stuff. But so on Wednesday nights here of late, we do church night. So for people who are just tuning in who have never been here on Wednesday night, that's what it's all about. For those of you who show up for prayer meeting night here every night, church night every Wednesday night, you know what it's all about. And all I can say is bless you, my children. Amen, amen, and amen. We'll be back after a commercial or two. Stay with us.
Coming up to the Flying Monkey Right, it's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. We mentioned last night about some of the racism that's going on the floor of the convention, the Republican convention in Tampa. A black woman who is a camera person for CNN had nuts thrown at her, and one of the white racists said, "This is what we feed." What was it? "This is what we feed the monkeys," or the "This is what we feed the animals." Yeah, there have been a couple other incidences like that, and it is unremarkable in its banality when you get right down to it. The entire Teabag Nation that now thinks it owns the Republican Party, it does not. The Teabag Nation has a prominent place in the Republican Party, but they are in turn owned by corporate America. These stupid-ass baggers are doing exactly what corporate America, the decisions that the capitalists have made and filtered down through these organizations run by former members of Congress and political operatives. The teabaggers are about as original as a sack of snot, but they just think they are. So their whole thing is based on racism. The other side of that coin, the Yahoo News Washington bureau chief, David Chalian, was fired this morning after an incident with an open mic during an online broadcast from the Circle Jerk in Tampa. David Chalian, later apologized for his remarks. But what happened was, during the broadcast, Chalian can be heard saying that Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney and his wife Ann were, quote, "not concerned at all," end quote, and, quote, "happy to have a party with black people drowning," end quote. Chalian apparently was referring to the simultaneous occurrence of the convention convening in Tampa and Hurricane Isaac hammering through New Orleans and Haiti. There are a bunch of people in Haiti that drowned. I don't know about the Dominican Republic or some of the Caribbean islands, but the lesson here: the truth always costs you your job if you're in the broadcast business. Eventually, if it doesn't cost you your job, it marginalizes you to the point where you might as well quit, because you're damn sure never going to make a living wage. A Yahoo spokesperson released a statement regarding the company's decision to fire Chalian effective immediately. This is the statement from Yahoo. Quote, "David Chalian's statement was inappropriate and does not represent the views of Yahoo." Well, who in the hell ever said it did? "He has been terminated," ooh, "effective immediately. We have already reached out to the Romney campaign, and we apologize to Mitt Romney, his staff, their supporters, and anyone who is offended." You see how that works? See how that works? You know in your gut, if you're a normal person, you know that what Chalian said was abso-goddamn-lutely true. You know it was true. Except happy might have been the right word. Impervious may have been a better word. Didn't give a damn may have been a better phrase. That people were drowning, black people were drowning, while these Caucasian freaks are having their enormous circle jerk in Tampa. This is exactly what happened the first with Hurricane Katrina. Nobody gave a goddamn. Nobody cared. There were no white people in the entire government under the Bush crime family who did a thing. How many hundreds of people died in Katrina? So if you are in any form of media and you speak the truth and you speak it in a way that's blunt, God help you. I mean, the road is littered with people who have made factual statements, who were forced out, fired, removed. I've been down that road. I'm not comparing myself to any of these hot shots, but I've been down that road before. I know exactly what it feels like when you speak the truth, when you don't couch your terms with a bunch of garbage talk. You hit a brick wall. And I've had it happen to me a couple of times. With big broadcast organizations, ABC News was one of them. ABC Radio was one of them. Cox Broadcasting was another. So I know what this guy, David Chalian, is feeling. Now, he didn't, you know, the rule in broadcast, the only thing I would fault him with for is the rule in broadcast. If you're anywhere near a microphone, shut up or don't say anything. I mean, always assume the mic is hot. The mic is open. It's always open. I've had a couple of instances here since parting company with the now dead Air America, where I used an F word when I thought my microphone was off, and it wound up, being transmitted to radio stations around the country, and I got my share of warnings. You've got to stop that. So, and I understand. I mean, okay, but the rule, and this is the one that David Chalian broke, was if you are anywhere in the same county as a microphone and you're in the broadcast business, shut up. Unless you are saying the party line, unless you are saying what your corporate bosses will allow you to say. If you speak the truth, you're doomed.
Nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. So David Chalian said that Rami and his wife Ann were not concerned at all to be having a party with black people drowning. He immediately got fired. And he issued a statement today, and he issued an apology today, this afternoon. He wrote that he was profoundly sorry. Chalian also apologized, apparently privately and publicly, to the Romney campaign. This is the statement. I am profoundly sorry for making an inappropriate and thoughtless joke. I was commenting on the challenge of staging a convention during a hurricane and about campaign optics. I've apologized to the Romney campaign, and I want to take this opportunity to publicly apologize to Governor Ms. Romney. I also regret causing any distraction from the exceptional coverage of the Republican convention by Yahoo News and ABC News. Oh, God, they lifted it up and just sliced them off for you, didn't they, David, huh? Just reached in there and grabbed hold and took those pinking scissors and went snip! I understand. Just remember, if you're near an open mic, consider it to be live. In keeping with Church Night, although this probably should be titled Mosque Night, there's a case in Pakistan. There's a Pakistani girl who is a Christian. And see, this drives me to going back to being a nail biter about religion. She's at the center of a blasphemy case. Yeah. And, yesterday, her lawyers applied for her release from jail. And believe it or not, an influential Muslim cleric offered his support to get her released. Now, Here's the backstory. The Pakistani authorities have held this girl. Her name is Rimsha Masi, in a high security jail since August 16, when hundreds of Muslim protesters, you can just imagine these these wild-eyed religious fanatics, right? Angered over claims that she had burned pages from an Islamic holy book, not the Quran. But these hundreds of Muslim protesters, all men, you can count on it, surrounded a police station in Islamabad to demand that she face prosecution, or in the language of these fundamentalists, that means bring her out so we can rip her into a million pieces and let the crows eat the pieces. So, fearing violence, the police went ahead and filed blasphemy charges against Rimsha Masi. Here's the rest of the story. Relatives and human rights workers say she was 11 years old. She has Down syndrome and should therefore be exempt from the blasphemy laws. The girl comes from an impoverished family of Christian sweepers. They sweep the streets. They sweep for tips, donations, alms. They're beggars. Apparently, this girl with Down syndrome, 11 years old, was seen by these Muslim fundamentalist whack jobs holding a burned copy of something called the Nurani Qaida. It's a religious textbook used to teach the Quran to children. It wasn't a burned copy of the Quran. It was a burned copy of a textbook. Her attorney, Tahir Chowdhury, said a medical board had established, and this was 3 years ago, she's now 14 and had a degree of mental disability. She has Down syndrome. The lawyer said the report establishes that her mental condition does not match her age and physical condition. Now, according to the rest of this, the medical finding could help break the deadlock in a case that obviously has caused human rights groups to go ballistic. Now, this is Pakistan's government that has arrested her. 11-year-old Down syndrome child who was seen standing with burned pages from a religious textbook. Now, for right now, there's a lot of worry about her well-being because she is still incarcerated at Adiyala Jail in Rawalpindi, where her attorney told reporters that he found her when he visited her last Saturday. He found her weeping and crying, sitting in a corner of her cell. Amnesty International said it was extremely concerned for her safety, noting that some people accused of blasphemy in Pakistan have been killed by vigilantes before their cases reach trial. Why, of course, this is religious madness. This is what it does. An 11-year-old child with Down syndrome, and I only add the Down syndrome as just an extra aspect of the story. It doesn't make any difference if she had Down syndrome or not. But that's the way the story is being reported. An 11-year-old child standing there, and these rabid sons of bitches want to rip her to pieces! This is what religion does. How far are we from this in this country? Oh, Mike, come on. We're Christians here. We wouldn't do that. Yeah. Human rights campaigners said that this girl's parents were also in protective custody of the office of the Minister for National Harmony. Does that sound like something out of Orwell? The former minister was shot to death outside his Islamabad home last year because the former minister had taken the side of another woman who had been charged with some crazy goddamn a crime that the Muslim crazy blood-eyed psychopaths had decided, well, we're going to kill him too. The whole issue is considered politically toxic, according to the New York Times, particularly since the assassination of the governor of Punjab province, Salman Taseer, at the hands of his own bodyguard in January last year. The bodyguard said he killed Mr. Taseer because he had supported changes to the blasphemy laws. And because he had supported, the governor had supported Asia Bibi, the first woman sentenced to death for blasphemy. So the governor supported her, the governor's own bodyguard, with his mind rotted by religious fundamentalism, killed him. Killed him. The woman sentenced to death for blasphemy remains in jail. Now, if the young girl in this story is released this week, there's little chance that she can return to her home, according to human rights organizations. It's not possible for her to stay in the same village because of security concerns. So this organization, Human Rights Organization, has in the past helped resettle people accused of blasphemy in this crazed goddamn country of Pakistan, settled in the United States, Canada, Germany. Plans are already being made to relocate this 14-year-old with Down syndrome and her family. So, there you have it. She was 11. And these religious fundamentalists want to rip her to pieces. They're going to take her out and bury her up to her chin and then stone the head until the head is full of bruises and bleeding and religion. And, you know, for people who want to say, well, now, come on, Mike, you're being very hard on Catholics and Muslims and Protestants. And every time you go after the Orthodox Jews, you're just showing your ignorance. You don't understand. There is a lot of good that religion does. And I counter that by saying, no, there isn't. It's very simple to me. No, there isn't. There is not. There is not a lot of good that religion does. Any good that is done by a human being for whatever altruistic reasons would be done if religion never existed. Church night, huh? We'll be right back. This hour has been sponsored by Chris in New York, and his message, this is a reminder to all truth seekers to sign up for the a podcast subscription and sponsor an hour of the program. Thank you, Chris. Phones are open if you want to join in, 877-996-2556. The New York Times runs this thing on Wednesday morning in their on their op-ed page. Invitation to a dialogue is what it's titled. They will take a letter to the editor and used it as a point of discussion 4 days later on Sunday. They invite people to comment on what the letter to the editor that they have selected for this invitation to a dialogue, hence the name. They invite people to email in or whatever with a point of view. And then on Sunday, they republish the letter and the responses. Here's the letter from today. This is from Jay Feldman in Port Washington, New York. He writes, there was a time in the not-so-distant past when many, if not most, publicly held corporations, including the one for which I worked, embraced in their mission statements, codes of conduct, and similar pronouncements, a responsibility to serve multiple stakeholders. Their stockholders, of course, but also their employees, as well as customers, suppliers, and the community in which they operated. Today, all too many companies, in deed and often in word, articulate a single-minded obligation to serve only their investors by focusing exclusively on profitability. As a result, we have witnessed corporate downsizings and outsourcings of jobs, restructuring of pension plans or their complete termination, reductions in health care benefits, and wage stagnation in spite of increased productivity. Domestic suppliers have been squeezed or more often replaced by cheap foreign sources. Customers seeking service are confronted with automated answering machines and foreign call centers. Environmental concerns are viewed as obstacles to profitability. At the same time, the senior managers of these enterprises have seen their compensation grow exponentially as a reward for their perceived contributions to the bottom line. Sadly, what these corporations fail to appreciate is how their obsession with the bottom line is shrinking their markets, both domestic and foreign. The large number of people unemployed, underemployed, afraid of losing their jobs, or without the means to pay all their bills perpetuates the present worldwide economic crisis. Add to this the unwillingness of business to pay their fair share of taxes to support education, health care, and the infrastructure that is critical to their success. In the end, these self-serving practices endanger the very profitability their practitioners seek to enhance. We need to return to the earlier model of the corporation as a good citizen. Doing so can help ensure the long-term viability of our free enterprise system. Signed, Jay Feldman, the writer's retired corporate lawyer. Yeah, I remember that time. It wasn't that long ago, was it? You can go back to, 50s, 60s, 70s, the 80s, it started to disappear. The 80s, remember, was the greed decade when all of a sudden greed is good. Don't pay any attention to the people you're stomping on and climbing over. This is a capitalist society. Only the people who think about themselves ever get ahead. You know, that was the 80s. That was the Reagan era. That was the greed, the gimme, the me decade, blah, 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 blah. But I do remember when corporations did show their citizenship. Now, remember, Mitt Romney will tell you corporations are people. And remember, the Supreme Court has said that corporations have a right to free speech. So I'm not talking about filings in a lawyer's office somewhere. I always thought I was when I talked about corporations. I thought it was just a sheath of papers. Hell, we have a corporation here at Molloy Broadcasting. And I haven't had lunch with my corporation in the longest damn time. Maybe we should take it out for a walk, Kathy. Should we keep it over there in the filing cabinet? But our corporation is probably pounding on the goddamn side of the filing cabinet to get out and take a piss. I can't say piss on the air. Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say it. Stations, be warned. I'm sorry. You know, go ahead, cancel me. We haven't taken our corporation out for a walk. So it concerns me. But I digress. I remember the time when corporations felt that they had an obligation. This is before they would demand tax breaks and tax holidays that went on for decades in order to open up some cheap-ass little plant in the neighborhood and pay people $7.50 an hour until they decided, well, time to move to China. We can get people there for $7.50 a day. Well, what about the tax breaks we gave you? Hey, goodbye. Thanks for all the fish. So if you want to, check it out, nytimes.com. Find this, Invitation to a Dialogue, The Corporate Citizen. Yeah, see, corporations are people, as Mitt will tell you, and Citizens United ruling will let you know that corporations have a right to make unlimited contributions to political campaigns and can hide everything and blah, 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 blah. But when it comes time to the responsibility that these filthy dung-eating Republicans are always talking about, and the theme of their circle jerk down there, I built this! No, you didn't. You didn't build anything. You've never built anything. Never in your lives. If you take a look at the red states and take a look at the blue states, which states provide the most tax revenue that goes into the national treasury to take care of things we all need to have taken care of, and which states provide the less? The blue states provide more money. The red states provide less. And who takes more? Well, you know the answer to that without me even saying it. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
This is a referral.
The hour. It's the Malloy Show on Church Night. This hour is being sponsored by Tedine in Vancouver. Thank you, Tedine. Tedine writes a quote from a favorite author, Portuguese writer José Saramago, who passed in 2010. Quote, if there is a way for the world to be transformed for the better, it can only be done by pessimists. Optimists will never change the world for the better. End quote. And that's you, Mike and Kathy, and all the other truth seekers from Tedine in Vancouver. Thanks, Tedine. That's high praise indeed. The phone number here is 877-996-2556. Robert's been holding on here for a while. You're in Baton Rouge, Robert?
Good evening, Mike. This is Robert, and don't call me Paiush, call me Bobby. Best regards to you and your family. This ain't got nothing to do with them, but it's got something to do with me and you, Mike.
I thought you were at the convention.
I've been hearing things you've been saying. You hear the size. You've seen the size of my ears, Mike. You can't hide nothing from me.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah, that's right. And I flew over your house flapping my ears on my way to the convention, Mike.
But you did.
I take umbrage with this, Mike, because I'm a fine southern gentleman of the highest pollute.
Yeah.
And I don't want to hear these things about me no more. Mike, I wasn't using Isaac for no political gain. Not one bit.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. I understand, though, that you're already bitching about the federal government has not responded sufficient to the needs in the state of Louisiana. Paiush, I thought you were...
Well, hold on there again, Mike. Now my name is Bobby.
Excuse me, Bobby. I was under the impression that you didn't want any help from the federal government, that you don't, you know, you're one of these teabagger types. You don't want anything to do with it. Well, why are you complaining that the Obama administration hasn't provided you what you think you need when the truth is the Obama administration is following the procedures laid out after, that was revised after George Bush let you all drown?
Well, Mike, you got to remember one thing.
Yeah.
Even though I talk about the federal government, I was a federal employee as a congressman. You know, hypocrisy is my middle name. Bobby Hypocrisy Jindal.
I see.
Can I get amen on that, Mike?
Oh, you sure can.
All right, so amen. I'll be flying over your house on the way back, and I might do a four-point
landing. Oh, no, don't do that. Don't do that. It's okay. If you're watching the TV, there's a war criminal up there right now addressing everybody. She's talking about America's leadership. I'm sure you're familiar with Condoleezza Rice. And I just wondered, in your opinion, Governor, why isn't Condoleezza Rice in prison someplace? Why isn't she in The Hague being tried for war crimes?
Mike, I thought she was a clone of Hitler and drag. I didn't know.
You didn't know. All right, well, listen, Bobby.
You seen them teeth on that woman, Mike? As much money as she makes, and she's been accepted into Augusta National Golf Club. Can the woman get her teeth fixed and get a hairdo, Mike?
I don't know. I'll tell you.
Well, Augusta's right there around you, Mike. You can go talk to her.
That's true. I could, couldn't I? Okay, well, I'll try to do it. Bobby, thanks for checking in.
Piyush there, Mike.
I'm sorry. Piyush, thanks for checking in.
All right, you have a nice evening.
Take care of things down there in Baton Rouge. Appreciate it, Piyush. Whew. We get some calls in here. What else we got? Since Jindal just called in, from Talking Points memo, it says Jindal is already complaining that the Obama administration is being stingy with federal resources. Wait a minute, you build it! You build this! What do you want any federal money for, Bobby? The usual FEMA pre-disaster protocol has been activated. This was yesterday, before Hurricane Isaac made landfall. The Obama administration has approved Jindal's request for a disaster declaration. The Obama administration's actions thus far have earned praise from the state's two senators, including David Vitter. You remember him, the one who, another Republican who likes to cheat on his old lady. Moreover, the steps the administration, Obama administration, has taken are broadly similar to the Bush administration's initial response to Hurricane Gustav in 2008. Not Katrina, 2008. And when that hurricane hit, Jindal didn't criticize anybody. Jindal's chief complaint, and let me reiterate that, the Obama administration is doing exactly what the Bush administration did in 2008. And Jindal was happy with that. Jindal's chief complaint is that the Obama administration has not provided for the federal government to reimburse Louisiana for expenditures the state is making in preparation for the storm. See what I'm talking about right before the break when I said these red states are the ones that suck as much of the national treasure as they possibly can into their racist goddamn bellies? But when it comes time to contribute back, they don't want to. They rely on the blue states to patch the roof and replace the linoleum in the kitchen and clean up the front steps and mow the lawn. Let the blue states do it. Asked yesterday to respond to Governor Jindal's push for further assistance, FEMA Administrator Craig Fugit explained, quote, primary responsibility for evacuations really falls to state and local governments. And when it's extraordinary, the federal government can support that with financial assistance. What the president said yesterday was, if you have a request for a specific federal assistance. We're ready to provide that life safety issue. We're not going to hold anything up, but we'll look at the impacts and determine, does this really exceed the state's capability that requires federal tax dollars to support? So early on, the request was direct federal assistance. That's what Bobby Jindal wanted. If the financial impacts are greater than the state of Louisiana can manage, we assess that and we'll make recommendations, again, looking at what the governor has requested. Now, that's the exact same approach the Bush administration took when Hurricane Gustav was bearing down on Louisiana in 2008. And according to the Louisiana Times-Picayune, used to be the New Orleans Times-Picayune, didn't it? Quote, though Jindal called on the federal government to shoulder the full cost of the federal, state, and local efforts, he did not publicly make the same criticisms when former President George W. Bush issued a similar declaration that included a cost ceiling as Hurricane Gustav approached the state. Though as the storm was trailing off, the state and the Bush administration fought over exactly who would pay for what portion of the federal response, end quote. Oh, Piyush Jindal! You hypocritical rat, you. You disgusting, hypocritical rat. We'll be right back.
Here's Mike Malloy. It's a damn about the future of children. Just building a cash flow, making a bank account. Let us expose the truth. Is that what the war's about? Because I don't understand. But what kind of a man?
21 past the hour. So Bobby Jindal raises himself up to his full 5 feet 2 inches and starts bitching and complaining that he's not, the state of Louisiana is not getting what the state of Louisiana, in Bobby Jindal's opinion, deserves with this hurricane. He's getting this is when the hurricane was approaching. And he got exactly the same thing he got from the Bush administration in 2008 with Hurricane Gustav. And, of course, there was no bitching and complaining then. Bobby Jindal is a candy-ass hypocrite. He's another one of these Christian evangelical religious freaks. No, he's not Hindu. He is... He's a Christian convert. Jindal spokesman Kyle Plotkin did not respond to Talking Points Memo's request for further comment on the appropriateness of the Obama administration's approach here, which is where this article appeared in Talking Points Memo. But the spokesman told the Times-Picayune, get this, that Jindal learned from his experience in 2008 to press harder. Plotkin said, quote, we've learned from past experience that you have to push the federal bureaucracy. We make no apologies for fighting for the people of Louisiana, regardless of who is president, end quote. You hypocritical lying punk. Now, New Orleans Mayor Mitch Landrieu, along with Republican Senator David Vitter and Democratic Senator Mary Landrieu, have all praised FEMA's efforts to date. Vitter, the adulterous thug who brought his poor, emotionally battered wife out on stage with him when he said, "Yeah, well, I've sinned, but, you know, God has forgiven me." And poor Mrs. Vitter stood there, and you could just tell what she was thinking through the Valium haze that she was probably in or appeared to be in. She was just thinking, you know, "I'm going to wait, David, maybe 2 years, maybe five. But one night you're going to go to sleep, and I'm going to Lorena Bobbitt you, and you're going to wake up in the morning to take your morning pee, and you won't be able to." Vitter was particularly effusive about the support he's getting from the Obama administration. He said, "I have not talked with FEMA, but my staff has, and they have been a lot more proactively engaged ahead of the event than ever before." Well, good for you, David. Can't you just imagine that David Vitter's wife just stands there and looks at him the way she did at that press conference when he confessed to whatever it was he confessed to? And she's just standing there with that poor look on her face, like, you know, "What am I doing here?" Yeah, really. I have another mention. I just want to mention to you, the other night I talked about the Changelings progressive newspaper in L.A., run by John Johnson. It's one of the few remaining truly radical progressive publications left. And I asked you to go to the website, and I don't know if you did or not, but I'm going to mention it again. His website is change-links.org, change-links.org. If you would, go to the website. You might want to take a subscription. Hell, it's not that much. And he'll mail it to you. It doesn't make any difference where you live. He'll mail it to you. And there may be something else you can do there. Change-links.org, especially if you live in the L.A. area. Would you do that for me? John Johnson, he's a good guy. He's struggling to keep that little alternative newspaper alive. So, change-links.org. Check them out, please. B. Wright is in Atlanta. Hey, B. Wright.
Yeah, what's going on?
Hey, not much, but I'll tell you what. I'm just saying hi. I got to put you back on hold because we have to do a break here. Can you stick around?
I will.
Okay, I'll put you on hold. We'll come right back and talk with B. Wright. This is going to be interesting. B. Wright in Atlanta. B. Wright wants to talk about the war criminal, Condoleezza Rice, and her speech at the convention tonight. All right, we have one open line. Why don't you call in and voice your opinion? 877-996-2556 is the number. We have lots of open lines now since Sirius moved us from 9 to midnight to 3 a.m. So give us a call, 877-996-2556. We'll be right back.
Yeah. आजा जिंद शामी आने के तले आजा जरी वाले नीले आसमान के तले
Doing talk radio right from the left it's Mike Malloy
आजा जिंद शामी आने के तले आजा जरी वाले नीले आसमान के तले
It's about 24 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Tedin in Vancouver. Tedin writes a quote from a favorite author, Portuguese writer José Saramago, who passed in 2010. Quote, if there is a way for the world to be transformed for the better, it can only be done by pessimists. Optimists will never change the world for the better, end quote. And that's you, Mike and Kathy, and all the truth seekers. From Tedin in Vancouver. Thank you, Tedin. It's, like I said earlier, high praise. I'm not familiar with José Saramago, and I'm not even sure I'm pronouncing his name right, since it is obviously Portuguese. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. Anyway, thank you, Tedin. I appreciate the sponsorship. Be Right is in Atlanta. How are you?
Mike Malloy, great. Never been better, man. I'm just enjoying the RNC. Never seen so many great Americans in one location in my life.
Yeah, right.
Fantastic night in America.
Amen.
God bless America, Mike Malloy.
Yeah, absolutely.
God bless America.
Are you watching right now, Paul Ryan? And if you want to see the face of fascism, take a look at this guy. Did he drag his mom out again? Did he mention his mom?
He did.
His mom. I don't know. I don't know if she's playing with a full deck, if all the lights are on or whatever, but he keeps dragging her out and using her as a prop. Now, if Obama did that, of course, Obama would just try to gut him. But you're looking at the face of fascism. Look at this guy.
Mike Malloy, it's the same prop that the far left used the blacks, they use them as pawns in their political game to stay in power. You know the richest SOBs in this planet are the Democrats, the ones with the D behind their name. And you know they're playing that power game. And I know you don't like it because I know you don't like capitalism. I know you don't like free markets, by the way.
Wait a minute. The richest people are Democrats.
They are. Oh, yeah, you know that.
Who are these people?
What about Feinstein's husband?
Who?
How about Pelosi's husband?
Well, no way.
Wait a second.
If you can't name them, what the hell are you calling this program for? I'll tell you what, Be Right. You go back and do your homework, find out who these rich Democrats are, and then give me a call. And I'll be happy to put you on the air. But I have kind of a rule here, Be Right. And that is, I don't put people on unless you know what the hell you're talking about. You know, so take care. Keep it lit. What was that, Kathy? Be Right? Oh, well. It's just not sporting to play with them anymore. You know, the richest people are Democrats. Really? Is that right? Well, I'll be damned. I had no idea. Dave is in Portland, Oregon. Dave, hey. Welcome to the program.
Hey, how's it going, Mike?
It's going.
Yeah. Ryan is Mati. He is totally. I was listening the other night. Maybe it was last night. You had this emailer that was talking about some gal who was talking about how she couldn't tell you who she was and how they have all these plans.
Right.
Remember that?
Yes.
Remember that email? Yeah, I was reminiscing a little bit. You know, I was living in Los Angeles in from 88 to 95,
mm-hmm.
and I experienced a little upheaval over there. I don't know if you ever heard about that, the L.A. riots that happened.
After the Rodney King. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, these guys are so incompetent, the so-called authorities. I mean, I know you sound pessimistic a lot of times about how, you know, they got their heel on our neck and stuff. And I just don't, I don't think they can handle it, what it may be to come. I mean, people are really angry. I am so mad. I mean, I think people in your or my generation are more mad than the younger people because they don't know how good it used to be. And I just, I remember driving down this freeway, and it was dusk in Los Angeles, and it was like, you know, the freeways there are big. They're big.
Mm-hmm.
Like 12 lanes, you know, six each side. And it was dusk. And usually at that time of the day, it's like really busy, like wall-to-wall traffic. And I saw one car a mile down the road.
Uh-huh.
And I was going like, am I in a sci-fi flick or what is going on here?
Yeah, yeah, that would have been mega freaky.
Yeah, it was like being on another planet. And,
right.
And you know, it was really bad. It was really bad. I mean, that place got beat up really bad in the early 90s, courtesy of Herbert Walker and Reagan and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I've lived through, I don't know, it's my luck or something, but because I felt like a depression then. And I don't know, I was scared then, but I've been more scared and angry lately. And I know a lot of people are really scared and angry. And I just don't, you know, I don't think it's it's going to be anything that they'll be able to manage.
Well, I agree with you, and I think what was taken away over the last 30 years, and you're right, people who are 40 right now, we're only 10 when this process of taking it away, and the thing that was taken away was kind of optimism. I don't want to use the word hope, but optimism, the idea that, you know, we've gone through so much in this country, if we just keep trying to do the right thing, maybe we can move forward. Maybe, you know, I can remember being an optimist, in the early 80s, until all of a sudden it started to dawn on me, what was going on with Reagan. I don't mean to make it sound like I was a total political naif in the 80s, in the early 80s. I understood things, but I hadn't gotten into a broadcast yet. I was working for a weekly newspaper, and, you know, I shared some of the optimism you're talking about. I wasn't making any money. I was making 125 bucks a week, but it was still, there's a sense of optimism that is totally gone, and I've come to realize what the national security state has become, what we have become in this country, and what the corporatists are doing, and what the capitalists are doing, and how they're nailing everything down. And pretty soon, if you want to protest, you can send in a certified letter, return receipt requested to the minister of protesting, and see if you can get a spot where you can.
Let me just say this: that you know, little things happen. They can handle one little temple here and there, but when everything's, you know, full bore, it's going to be a different game completely. I just know that.
I think so.
I know. And I mean, back in your day when you were making 125 a week, maybe, you could live well on that, too.
Well, no, don't misunderstand. Don't understand. My ass was starving to death on that. But I was doing things I wanted to do. And it really didn't matter that much, you know. I was able to get by, is what I'm trying to say.
It was the future.
Yeah, well, that was the thing, and I had a 3-year-old son I was raising at the time too, 30 years ago, and somehow we got by just fine. So, but what we got by on a lot was optimism, and that's gone. And I agree with you, Dave. When the caca hits the fan, it's going to really hit the fan, and I think there is a mountain of anger in this country directed towards the corporatists, towards the right wingers, toward these Christian fundamentalist crazy people who are destroying the republic. And it's probably coming as surely as there are erasers on pencils. These people need to be erased. All right, Dave, thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in, okay?
All right, bye-bye.
All right, take care. Kathy, do you want to bring up some of... This will chase everybody away. You want to bring up some of Ryan? Want to bring it up a little bit? Want to hear what he's saying? No? All right. Oh, this is applause. Okay.
And the story.
No, can't do it.
And the story.
There we go. No.
Forever shifting blame to the last administration is getting old.
Oh, stop it. All right, never mind.
years ago. Isn't it about time he assumed responsibility?
Oh, bite me. Isn't it about time the Republicans got the hell out of the way? We got to take a break here. We do. I don't want to listen to Eddie Munster here. I don't want to listen to the face of fascism. I thought it might be kind of funny, but to hell with it. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Let Mike do it for you. It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Tadine in Vancouver, British Columbia. Her message, she said, I have a quote from a favorite author, Portuguese writer José Saramago, who passed away in 2010. Here's the quote. If there's a way for the world to be transformed for the better, it can only be done by pessimists. Optimists will never change the world for the better. End quote. Tadine says, and that's you, Mike and Kathy, and all the truth seekers. Tadine in Vancouver. Thank you. It's very kind, undeserved, but very kind. Thank you for the sponsorship, Tadine. And I have not heard of this author. And John in New York City writes, Mike, José de Saramago was a Nobel Prize-winning author from Portugal. Read Blindness. Blindness is about what happens to society when everyone loses his or her sight. It's a very important novel right up Orwell's alley as ever. Thanks so much for your show. Listening as usual from NYC, John. Thanks, John. I had just never heard, and I hope I'm pronouncing it right, Saramago. Blindness. All right. Everybody write that down. Blindness. Saramago is spelled as if it were Saramago, S-A-R-A-M-A-G-O, José Saramago. Thanks, John. Eddie is in Garland, Texas. Hey, Eddie, haven't heard from you for a while. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm getting by.
Yeah, I know. They switched you, man. It makes me mad.
Yeah, well, you can listen online now, but if you want to hear us on Sirius, midnight Eastern time. Well, that's 11 o'clock Central time. Texas in Central time, right?
Yeah.
So you only have to stay up till 11 o'clock Central time, and you can hear.
Oh, I catch you online. I catch you on. That's how I've always caught you, actually. So.
Oh, I see. Well, I'm glad you do, Eddie. Thank you.
Hey, man, you're the one that led me to you. So
if that makes any sense. What? I'm the one that led you to me. Oh, okay.
Yeah, right. Well, your way of looking at things for sure. I mean, you're definitely one of a kind. So.
Yeah, well.
But I wanted to read something, and I've been wanting to read this for a while because it before you got switched over, you were talking about patriots.
Right.
And this friend of mine has a Facebook page, and I mean, is it okay if I plug her name on here?
No,
or
sure,
what?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, as long as it's okay with her.
Yeah, she said it was okay. I talked to her the night I was going to do it. It was like a day after you got
well,
switched over.
Just remember, I have a lot of freaks that listen to this program. A lot of stalkers.
Oh, she's got a lot of freaks that come to her page and troll her page. So
go ahead.
It's not her real name, anyways. It's a cover page.
Well,
or whatever,
share it with us because we got about two and a half minutes.
Okay, so her name is Duchess St. Rollins, and she writes, "Patriots, you call yourselves patriots. You, and I'm censoring this letter. You clearly don't know the definition of the word, you thoroughly deluded mental patients. Pursuing this trash heap you call a Facebook page, I notice that you display a lot of meme jabs about President Obama blaming others for his supposed failures. I find it fascinating considering you have more excuses than a pregnant nun for why you cannot seem to succeed or pay your fair share of taxes. Let me tell you a little something about patriots. Patriots pay their taxes because they realize that living in a thriving society costs money and we all have to chip in to enjoy those privileges. Patriots don't constantly demonize poor people or mind that there are social safety nets in place, instead realizing that letting poor people starve to death or live in squalor in the richest country in the world is not only immoral, it's shameful. Patriots don't blame minorities for all of our societal ills like a bunch of entitled infants and are aware that this is and always has been a melting pot of culture and diversity. Patriots don't begrudge health care to sick people simply because they can't pay the exorbitant fees and value all human life, not just the kind still in the womb. Patriots understand that we are only as strong as our weakest parts and want to strengthen our foundation. Patriots cooperate even when someone from the opposite party is in the White House instead of setting filibustering records and being the most traitorous obstructionist in the history of the U.S. Unlike you, patriots may have disliked the president in the past, but we have never hated him more than we loved America. And she's talking to a conservative page, so she says, you aren't patriots. You are brain-dead Fox News leading yourselves to slaughter. You are dolts. Actually dumb enough to believe that the failed policies of the last 30 years just need a little bit more time to take effect and that your beloved job creators actually care about America. You are a masochist that routinely vote against your own well-being and that of this country because you're too blind or too stupid to see what's really happening. You are foolish shills for the 1% that gleefully lend your drooling, gun-toting zombie masses to their nefarious agenda and then have the audacity to blame those of us trying to clean up the mess for your self-inflicted problems. In a nutshell, you're an embarrassment, a collective caricature for what the rest of us most routinely apologize. We are tired of saying sorry to the rest of the world for your willfully ignorant teabagging, and that's about all I can read.
Well, that's
the last sentence was pretty vulgar.
Yeah, I'll bet. I'll bet. Well, pass on to the writer that I certainly appreciate it. I know that the people listening who are rational people appreciate what she wrote, and it's so true. And, you know, again, I still cannot understand the mindset or the expectation from people who, for example, are following this this mess down in Tampa and really believe that Romney and Eddie Munster here are going to do anything. I mean,
like that guy. Well, who was that guy in Missouri that just said that? What was it, Todd Akin? I mean, women everywhere should be mad.
Well, yeah.
This guy, you know,
they certainly should, and I think rational people, men and women, are just furious with these rat bastards. But again, watch what happens on election day. This election is targeted to be stolen, and I'm afraid that the next president is going to be Mitt Romney, and this little turd Ryan is going to be the vice president, and it's going to be another
terrible. Terrifies me, man.
Well, it does me too, but that may be what's necessary to clean out the sewer. Eddie, I gotta go. Thanks, pal.
Thank you.
All right, take care. Don't be a stranger. We'll talk again. Stick around. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Giovanna. I think I'll say Giovanna, right? And here's Giovanna's message. I thought it would be ironic if another atheist sponsored an hour of church night. We need to procreate now if we want to have more of us to take the place of the right-wing nutballs in Congress and corporations. Atheists, truth seekers, go forth and multiply. Peace to us all, Giovanna. Well, there you go. All right, if you're not procreating now, perhaps you should get busy. You can start during the last hour of the program here. Thanks, Giovanna. Thanks for the sponsorship. Find another atheist and procreate. Yow! Okay, I know. Ann Romney's speech last night and all the... Oh, Mitt really is human. He makes me laugh. You know, that kind, well, that may be true. And there's nothing wrong with a spouse playing up what he or she considers to be the really nice aspects of the other spouse. Partner, spouse, whatever. Yeah, let's say partner. Because I don't like to acknowledge the marriage inequality that's fostered in this country by the right wing, the Christian crazy people. So, a couple of partners. It's normal for one partner to say about the other one, oh, yeah, he or she is just this and that and makes me laugh. But meanwhile, on the floor of the Republican National Convention cluster joke, according to Crooks and Liars, an attendee, one of the delegates, last night threw, they have the word allegedly in here, I'll leave it out, threw nuts at a black camera woman working for CNN and said, "This is how we feed animals," before being removed from the convention. Now, a network official at CNN confirmed the story to Talking Points Memo. Yeah, keep it classy, Republicans. That is so... I mean, how many... how many ways does the word racist have to be defined before people can look at this convention floor in Tampa at these Republican zombies and understand that the entire core issue, the core value of the Republican Party is racism. Well, there are two or three core values, but racism, hatred of women, and destruction of the country. Those are the core values, quotes around the word values, those are the core values of the Republican Party. So, you know, Ann Romney, Am Shromney, it doesn't make any difference who gets up there. And talks about, you know, Mitt really is human. I mean, think about it for a second. Somebody has to stand up and try to convince an audience that her partner should be president because he really is a human being? What? And I like this. Jack in Salem sent this to me after, this is Tampa, Florida. Dateline, AP. After Governor Mitt Romney's wife, Ann, delivered an impassioned speech last night portraying her husband as a warm and caring human being, that effort continued today in the convention hall as party and convention officials fret and pace. Swarms of technicians were beginning the transformation of the convention hall into what is hoped will be a helpful backdrop to Romney's acceptance speech tomorrow evening. Miles of new cables are being strung. Bank after bank of special lights are going up all over the hall, while special ultra-high-tech television cameras are being installed around the stage. Those cameras will operate in conjunction with very large high-def projectors and huge panels of glass, all working together to create the illusion that Romney can produce a reflection in a mirror. Conventioners and TV viewers will find out tomorrow evening whether or not the untried technique will work as hoped for. You got to be quick. You have to be quick to... I know about 10% of the listeners got that. I know you did, gentle truth seeker. But cameras will operate in conjunction with very large high-def projectors and huge panels of glass, all working together to create the illusion that Romney can produce a reflection in a mirror. Jack in Salem sent that. Thanks, Jack. Yeah, I get it. I get it. This is how we feed the animals. And then the Caucasoid threw nuts at a black camera woman working for CNN. This is how we feed the animals. There's somebody wonderfully inspired by Neil Bortz and Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck, huh? This is how we feed the animals. Oh, and then he was, or she was, removed from the convention. Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, and by the way, the parade of religious figures that are trying to bring God's blessing on this collection of evil bastards in Tampa. And Kathy wrote about this the other day. Rabbi Soloveitchik, Rabbi Meyer Soloveitchik, he delivered the opening prayer last night. Who else? Cardinal Timothy Dolan, the Roman Catholic Archbishop of New York, will deliver the closing prayer on Thursday night. Timothy Dolan, who would piss all over the cross if he thought he could get away with it. He does every time he opens his mouth. He is so anti the message of Jesus as to render him a total buffoon and clown. Dolan has said he wants to be seen as nonpartisan. This is a guy who rips Obama's policies and normal people's policies on marriage equality and abortion, a woman's privacy, contraception. Yeah, go ahead. Joseph Zwilling, a spokesman for the Archdiocese of New York, said that the cardinal, the blue jay, the thrush, the cardinal was going to pray not to engage in partisan politics. Yeah, right. Anyway, also delivering prayers at this sewer will be an Hispanic evangelical Christian, a Sikh, a Greek Orthodox archbishop, and two Mormon leaders. What's missing? No Muslim cleric has been invited. None. So I guess the message to go out, once again, is the absolute putrid, decaying hatred in this filthy political party, the Republican Party. The absolute hypocrisy, the lies, the deception, the deceit. So go ahead, line up all your religious thugs. You left one out. A Muslim cleric. And don't misunderstand, I'm not saying Muslim clerics are any different from rabbis or evangelical Christians or Sikhs or whoever. They're all religious nutballs, but it's just interesting that they forgot to invite a Muslim.
Ain't nobody gonna stop me, nobody gonna keep me from marching down freedom's road. Ought to be plain as the nose on your face. There's room in this land for every race. Some folk think that freedom just ain't right. Those are the very people I want to fight. That's why I'm marching. Yes.
Redefining anger management. Back to Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Tropical storm hurricane now, of course, Isaac has been battering mostly New Orleans, Louisiana, some Alabama. It's just, if you've been following us during the day today, it's more than just an inconvenience for the Republicans gathered in Tampa, the fact that they had to postpone their sewer gathering an extra day. As the Times pointed out the other day, Hurricane Isaac is a powerful reminder both of Republican incompetence in handling Hurricane Katrina 7 years ago, but also the party's plans to further cut emergency-related spending. I mean, you know, this is something you didn't hear Paul Ryan talk about last night at the convention, right? Or not Ryan, but the little twit from Wisconsin, the governor of Wisconsin. Oh, what the hell's his name? Anyway, the budget put together by Congressman Paul Ryan. Yeah, Scott Walker, I'm sorry, that's who was talking last night. He didn't mention any of this. The cuts that the Republicans have lashed against this kind of spending. You know, disaster avoidance spending. They don't talk about the fact that they cut this to pieces. The budgets assembled by Paul Ryan and embraced by Romney cut spending to emergency preparedness deeply, exactly the kind of money needed in Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and scores of other states for all sorts of disaster. But these people don't care. Take your goddamn bootstraps and fix your house or stop the flooding or save your farm. And as the Times points out, between 2010 and 2012, House Republicans forced a reduction of 43% in the primary grants from the Federal Emergency Management Agency that pay for disaster preparedness. That's almost half they cut. That's almost $2 billion that will not be available for evacuation equipment, evacuation supplies, communications gear that lets first responders speak to one another, training exercises. All that gone. Now, House Republicans tried this year to cut another third of $1 billion this kind of spending, but Democrats restored the money in a conference with the Senate. But the New Orleans area in particular will rely this week. And so far, for the most part, it's pretty impossible to stop flooding unless you want to build walls 100 feet high. But New Orleans is relying on $14 billion in levee construction, pumps, all sorts of flood control structures built by the Army Corps of Engineers since Katrina. But the budget, the construction budget for the Army Corps of Engineers has been cut by 21% since 2009 because of Republicans. And flood prevention was one of the areas they hit especially hard. You know, I guess they figured, well, Noah survived the flood. So if you don't survive the flood, it's because God doesn't like you. You know, God told Noah, Build an ark, 40 cubits by a million cubits, and get two of every living, breathing thing. Don't forget the tsetse flies. Don't forget the fleas. Don't forget the Anopheles mosquitoes that'll spread malaria. Don't forget all that stuff. Oh, and don't forget all the bacteria and all the scum and filth and disease-causing organisms. Get those all on the ark. Don't forget the unicorns and the dragons and the dinosaurs. Hurry up! So I guess the Republicans figure 2,000 years later, it's okay not to fund anything. Or, I mean, I'm sorry, 5,000 years later, you know, this was Noah. It's okay not to fund flooding because if God likes you, he will not smash your house into bits. If God likes you, he will not kill your family. If God likes you, he will not flood out your house. If God likes you, he won't destroy all the family livestock and your favorite little pet, Poochie. Poochie got picked up by a tornado and slammed to the ground. Oh, God hates you. Well, that's what the Bible says. Right? God got all pissed off. He said to Noah, I've had enough. I like you. I like your family. And, you know, Ham and Jess and Tomato and the rest of your family. I mean, okay, I'll save you people. But I'm going to kill everybody else because I'm in a real bitchy mood today. So flood preparedness and control and rescue operations, cut the funding. If God likes you, he'll keep you alive.
Let Mike do it for you. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Giovanna. Giovanna. Thanks, Giovanna. Her message. I thought it would be ironic if another atheist sponsored an hour of church night. We need to procreate now if we want to have more of us to take the place of the right-wing nutballs in Congress and corporations. Atheist truth seekers, go forth and multiply. Peace to us all, Giovanna. She's got the little winking eye symbol there. So, you know. Thanks, Giovanna. Where were we? Oh, yeah, the theft is underway. Again, start practicing saying President Romney. If this were, if everything were fair and just and logical, Romney would have as much chance of being president as I would. But that's not the way the system's set up. We have a media that is skewed right. We have corporatists that own everything. We have capitalists that have every single politician in the Congress in their pocket to one degree or another. Yes, even Bernie Sanders. I'm sorry. But Sanders has not taken a stand against the, I'm not going to get into that tonight. You know, just for those of you who are big Bernie Sanders fans, okay, you can send him an email and say, Malloy says you're in the pocket of the corporatists, too. Sorry. I hate to say that because I like Bernie Sanders and I think his socialist attitudes are great. But what is, I don't make it the rules. I just try to play the game. You know what I'm saying? But the theft is underway, so get used to saying President Romney. Just get used to doing it. Here's an example. The state elections chief in Ohio fired two Democrats from the elections board in the Dayton area after they pressed to allow, I think this happened yesterday, after they pressed to allow early voting on weekends. See, you know, it's been said by other people, you would think, in a society that supposedly is self-governed, starting at the essential level of voting, that that society, that system would want as many people to vote as possible. Let's get everybody out here. Oh, what a joke that is, huh? So the two Democrats on the elections board in the Dayton, Ohio area tried to push to allow early voting on weekends. But the Secretary of State, John Husted, a Republican, first he suspended the two, Thomas Ritchie Sr. and Dennis Lieberman. He suspended them. And then he temporarily lifted the suspension last week so the board could continue its work. And these damn Republicans, they tried it, or Democrats, they tried it again. They tried to get a resolution passed in the elections board to allow weekend voting for the people who couldn't get there during the week. So what did the Republican elections chief in Ohio do? Fired them. Because they had, quote, knowingly and willingly violated Ohio election law by not following his directive, the election chief's directive on early voting hours. So, now this is going on. This is just a little micro examination of the kind of voter suppression that, if you want more on this, just go to Brad Friedman's website, bradblog.com. I mean, there's tons of information there. Well, by the way, Brad's going to be filling in for us on Friday, day after tomorrow. But the voter suppression is the sharpest knife in the Republican arsenal of how to destroy this country. Voter suppression. Black folk, get them off the polls. They all vote Democratic. Latinos, get them off the polls. They all vote Democratic. Older people, get them off the polls. They all vote Democratic. College students, deny them the vote because they're too stupid. They'll vote Democratic. Don't forget, the original scheme was male, white, property owners only had the right to vote. The Republicans want to go back to the glorious days of the American Revolution where that was the case. Only they want to narrow it even further. Only white, Christian, business owners. Now, they may let some women vote as long as they can prove that their main function is to squeeze out babies. And women who have never used birth control and never worked out in the public sphere, like, think of somebody, Ann Romney. Well, wasn't it funny last night? Ann Romney telling everybody her husband's a regular guy, and didn't her horse win in the dressage event in the Olympics or something? Just regular people! You know, we were building the most expensive mansion in the history of mansions, but we'll let that wait. But I digress. Maggie in Mount Shasta, California, sent me an email. Mike, I know you're down on Obama, and I have been too. I hated it when he caved to extend the Bush tax cuts. But here's my hit on this political foolduggery. I think even though he's commander-in-chief in name only, he hasn't an ounce of control over the military, industrial, financial, rat bastard freaks from hell. Woo! The entire armed forces are run by a pack of neocon psychos, and Obama is not an insider. He's a pawn that was allowed to become president because the mob, that's us, was sick to our stomachs of the Bush-Cheney agenda. They had to have a candidate that appeared to be liberal enough to get elected, but politically weak enough to push around. The reason I'm going to vote for Obama is that he is sane. He may not be a strong leader, but to let Romney and Ryan take over would be giving the lunatics complete and utter control of the asylum that was once the United States of America. I don't want to let the neocons finish us off that easily. Maggie. Well, that's as good a reason as any to, you know, to vote for Obama. I've said before that, you know, voting is such a deeply personal enterprise that, you know, I'll just state my case on the program like I have for the past 3 years. And if you want to state your case like Maggie just did, I'd certainly welcome it. And we make our own decisions on this, right? And then Jean writes, Mike, call me paranoid, but imagine this. There will be no meaningful debates. The GOP will either win the election or so seriously divide the country as to make government non-functional. They'll do this by conspiring with Israel to bomb Iran as soon as possible. This could happen any minute, but definitely weeks prior to the election. This is the coup that makes world fascism a reality. The right-wingers will define the attack on Iran as a defensive measure for which Israel had no other choice. Our government will have to defend Israel from the inevitable counterattack on both Israel and the U.S. Any call that Obama makes for calming things down for a peaceful solution will be portrayed as a traitorous Muslim ready to betray his own country. Have you thought about this? The bat-crap crazy Israelis' obsession with Muslim threats and their relationship with big money, right-wingers? Have you thought about that? Gene, with a G. Yeah, I've thought about it. I would not be the least bit surprised. The threats and the saber-rattling and the missile, not saber-rattling, oh, that's such a quaint term, the missile-rattling. And what is it now? Where it concerns Syria, we've got to get troops in there. The Republicans are saying to find the those weapons of mass destruction that Assad has. You know, the great big canisters of poison gas. I guess those are the ones that used to be owned by Saddam Hussein, because Saddam Hussein had millions of tons of destructive power. You remember? Don't you remember? Sure you do. So we had to invade and murder hundreds of thousands of people, children, old ladies, old men, young men, young people, you know, just murder them, butcher them, blow them to pieces, plus lose thousands of our own troops to get those goddamn weapons, right? And they couldn't find them. Well, because they had been moved to Syria. So now we've got to attack Syria. And once we attack Syria, why, then we go after Iran. So Romney and the right-wing fascists, that's redundant. Romney and his fascist party, poor Romney. Romney couldn't find his ass with both hands. But he's going to be the figurehead. So Romney and the fascist party, yeah, they will go ahead and advocate very strongly for an attack on Iran, an attack on Syria. Who else can they attack? Who else is over there? How about Turkey? Why don't you guys figure? Yeah, that would be a good one. Attack Turkey. There's all kinds of Muslims there. This hour has been sponsored by Giovanna. Her message, I thought it would be ironic if another atheist sponsored an hour of church night. I think it's very unironic. I think it makes sense. We need to procreate now, Giovanna says, if we want to have more of us to take the place of the right-wing nutballs in Congress and corporations. Atheist truth seekers, go forth and multiply. Peace to us all, Giovanna. Thanks, Giovanna. Very kind of you to sponsor an hour. Mitt Romney, when he talks about his energy plan, you ever heard that? The energy plan is just, it's the Sarah Palin energy plan. That's all. Just drill, baby, drill. Drill, baby, drill. Didn't you like that phrase when it came out? I mean, that is just loaded with double entendre, isn't it? There she stood, the Republican Party's, how to say this without being accused of sexism, the Republican Party's vice presidential candidate last go-around. How's that? Standing up there with her attempts to sound vice presidential. Drill, baby, drill. Remember that? Drill, baby. Drill. Oh. Well, that's the Romney plan. His plan is to open vast new areas of dangerous oil drilling. Too dangerous oil drilling. Sure, you know. How about just drilling in Midtown Manhattan? I'm sure there's gas down there someplace and oil in Yellowstone National Park. Come on, let's go for it. He wants to increase reliance on these dirty, filthy, death forms of energy. Oil, gas, coal, nuclear reactors. He wants to gut or end investments in clean energy, eliminate public health regulations, ignore the threat of climate change. Just go for it. Just ride this goddamn rock until it just absolutely no longer can sustain life. And then we can all, well, you Christians, float up to heaven. Hallelujah, damn ya, huh? Woo! No Jews, no Muslims. No Hindus, no atheists, no queers, no liberals, no progressives. We have a second level for you women. But us white males, we going to heaven, Lord, hell, yeah, you're damn right. Soon as we destroy the planet. So that's Mitt Romney's plan. Now, the fact that he's not really a Christian. He's a cult member. I don't know where his, I guess he and the Scientologists have their own heaven someplace where, I don't know, they wander around on Jupiter and eat thetans or thetans eat them or some, I don't know. I have no idea. But there it is. Eliminate all these dirty, goddamn job-killing public health regulations. Get rid of those. Ignore the threat of climate change. So the ice is melting at the North Pole. That's wonderful. Then we can drill more. Ben Schreiber, who is a spokesperson for Friends of the Earth Action, had the following statement in response to Romney's so-called energy plan. Schreiber says, quote, Governor Romney's proposal is like an easy-bake recipe for cooking the planet. Cooking the planet. Double down on dirty energy. Gut end investments in clean energy and efficiency. And wait for the timer to go off on out-of-control climate change. Schreiber went on, Governor Romney developed the plan in close collaboration with the fat cat oil executives helping to bankroll his campaign. And it shows they stand to profit while our communities stand to suffer. While the fossil fuel industry pollution continues unabated. Schreiber concluded by saying, ultimately, Romney's plan shows how out of touch he is with the reality of climate change that Americans and people across the globe are waking up to. the summer. Communities have faced devastating droughts, super wildfires, floods, storms that have ripped lives and livelihoods apart. Romney's plan will accelerate these devastating impacts while offering no hope for solutions. End quote. Ben Schreiber, spokesperson for Friends of the Earth Alliance. And let me ask you something seriously. And you right-wingers who monitor the program, I want you to think about this, too. I realize the word think is kind of foreign to you, but that's when you engage your brain. You don't know what I'm talking about. Okay, forget it. I want everybody else to just consider, what would you do if somebody came into your home and started sprinkling lighter fluid all over your carpets and your hardwood floors and your buffet and your couch and, you know, went in the kitchen, that new granite countertop you have, just sprinkling lighter fluid all around and laughing and cackling all the time. You say, wait a second, you can't burn my house down. Wait a second. And then they struck a match and stood there looking at you. What would you do? And you had like, maybe 30 seconds to make a decision. And you know this clown is going to throw the match into the lighter fluid. What would you do? Well, if you're like me, you'd run to where you have one of your guns hidden, and you would grab it, and you'd bring it out, and you'd shoot the son of a bitch right through the forehead. Right? I mean, what other choice do you have? He's about to set your house on fire, burn you up, burn up your children, the family pets. So you're just going to stand there? I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
This is a referral.